incredible comebacks in NBA Finals history.
Welcome to the Sport Passion Podcast.
He shoots, he scores!
Here is your host, Lars Marendorf.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Passion Podcast. This is the first all-English episode of the 2021-2022 season, and I'm happy to welcome back an old friend of the show, I would even call him. It's Arthur Staple, who in the past has covered the Islanders and now has some more responsibility, and he's gonna talk about that. He'll talk about the Rangers, Islanders, what to expect from the teams, what he's seen in the offseason. So a great interview once again with Arthur. And if you want to follow Arthur, who's definitely worth a follow, at Stape Athletic is the Twitter handle. A lot of great stories, as I said, about the Islanders, about the Rangers, about hockey there in general. So at Stape Athletic, follow Arthur Staper, and now hopefully enjoy the interview with him. So I'm very happy to welcome back a guest who's been, I think it's the third time on my show now. So welcome back, Arthur Staple, to our small little German podcast here. And I really appreciate your time and I really appreciate your infos. And the last time we talked was right after the Anders Lee injury, and you were covering only the Rangers. So now that has changed. So welcome to the show, and maybe you can explain what has changed and also maybe why that has changed.
Well, it's good to be back, Lars. Yes, you know, I've done the Islanders for a long time, and pretty much the last three or so years at the Athletic since I started with them, it was just Islanders. But within the last few weeks, our Rangers writer, a good friend of mine named Rick Carpinello, decided to retire after 40 plus years of covering hockey. And since it was during the season, my editors decided that they might want to see if I was interested in switching over to cover the Rangers. You know, it's a team with a bit of a bigger fan base than the Islanders, certainly not as passionate maybe as the Islanders fan base is, as I think a lot of people see on social media that the Islanders fans are always very intense and focused on their team. But I, you know, it's just a bit of a different scenario here in New York with those two teams and the Devils as well. And then it kind of changed into a possibility of writing, you know, some on the Rangers and some on the Islanders and keeping my contacts with the Islanders and writing for that audience and also trying to develop some new contacts and write about a different team that I hadn't seen up close for a long time. I covered the Rangers many, many years ago at my old place of work, and the team is obviously very different from that was almost 20 years ago. But I am from this area, and you know, I understand the excitement that both teams can generate when they're good. And the Islanders obviously have been good for a few years now. The Rangers are trying to get back to that level after being good for a very long time. So it seemed like a good time to try my hand at doing a little bit of both. Some of the reactions online have not been so great. I think a lot of Islander fans feel the Athletic might be changing some things to focus our coverage away from them, but that is definitely not going to be the case. I think for people who subscribe to our site, they're going to get more coverage of both teams, which I think is going to be better for everyone.
Okay, just from the daily work, which would interest me as someone who has been to a couple of training locations there and also covering some teams in Germany, are you going to both rings when they have practices, and are you just going to the home games? Because if you would travel with one team, you would miss pretty much the other team's games. How does your daily schedule look like covering the teams right now?
Well, Rick Carpinello is still on the clock, I think, until the end of the month. So okay. He's got a few more games to write about. and I was at Islanders practice today working on a couple of stories. I was also on the phone talking to some people for some stories about the Rangers. So it's okay. It makes it a little bit busier for me, maybe a little harder to keep track. But I think, you know, when I started at The Athletic almost 4 years ago, the purpose of our coverage was not necessarily to cover every minute by minute, you know, update on whether it's a minor injury or a lineup change. But more so to really write in-depth stories on some of the players on the team, some of the ideas that each team is trying to put into practice. And I think that's really what I want to get back to with doing both teams, that there may be some larger stories or deeper features to have the time to do without getting too caught up in who's playing with whom or how each game turns out. You know, there's just a different audience, I think, for us in terms of what we try to develop, and rather than just churning out a few hundred words every day that really only scratches the surface. And I think that's what I try to keep front of mind as I go into this, that I'm trying to still get the best stories possible. I'll be on the road with the Rangers next week in Western Canada to be around them and see what they're about. And then when I get back, a week or so after that, the Islanders will be opening their new arena. And I'm certainly going to be there for the first couple of games of that, having been around them to see this process get started and finally have the arena be built. So I think it'll be good. I think, you know, the way the pandemic has affected everyone's ability to cover sports, and especially hockey, with Zooms and feeling a little bit distant from the contacts you used to have. As we get back into normal life, I guess, and normal sports writing, I feel like it'll be good to have a hand in both teams and be able to tell good stories about both teams. And that's really what will keep people reading.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one thing that I value highly with The Athletic. You mentioned Rick Capanello there. I was just reading an article by Shayna Goldman about the Rangers power play. So you got multiple people covering the New York and metropolitan area teams, guys for the Devils as well. So I think that's great. And as you mentioned, most of this stuff is not what you usually have, but it's more into details and into the stories and into the people. So regarding the two teams, let's start with the Rangers. And I said in my preview, their offseason pretty much started during the end of last year, because after that Tom Wilson game, if you want to call it that, against the Capitals, a lot of things have changed for the Rangers. They changed their GM, their coach. They made a couple of trades and also signing moves to get the team tougher, to bring more of a, I think Messier called it, street fight mentality or whatever that is. So far, how have you seen the team changed? Have you seen that they have changed in a way towards being more gritty and being more tougher to play against? Or is it just the beginning of the process and it's still too early to tell if that has really changed right now?
You know, it's interesting. I've been able to watch a few of their games in the last couple of weeks, and I see it starting to be that style of not so much intimidation or having that physical presence. It seems to be more about creating an identity for a team where you become a team that's tough to play against. I feel like Ranger fans would never want me to say it, but the way that they want to emulate what the Islanders have done under Barry Trotz is how you want to build your team. I think it's, you become a team that becomes comfortable playing close games, a team that, whether it's your top line of skilled guys or your fourth line of less skilled guys, everybody tries to play the same way. Within this framework of the same system, you don't care too much about running up a score or looking flashy. You really just care about getting points. And the Rangers had that stretch of four straight wins on the road, not necessarily against the most formidable opponents in Montreal and Ottawa and Nashville, but a good win over Toronto. But just being able to say we can win a 2-1 game, we can win a 3-2 game. We don't need to try to flash and dash, even though they do have tons of high-end skill. And I think you start to see the beginnings of that, that they can be comfortable in the close games. They can be able to win when they only score a couple of goals. Their goaltender obviously has been very good, Igor Shesterkin. So I think you're starting to see some of that, and it's going to take some time. I think, you know, the guys like Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad have to become okay with not being in the top 10 in the league in points. You have to make some sacrifices to be able to play that way. And I don't necessarily think it means making sure you start fights and, you know, push people after whistles. It's really just about having a core that has some mental toughness and the ability to withstand some adversity, to not get out of your lane or out of your system and try to do too much, which is something that's really hurt them. They were able to be pushed out of the game pretty easily in the last couple of years. And obviously not just the Tom Wilson game, but a couple weeks after that, or a week or so after that, they had the last two games of their regular season with the Islanders, and they needed to win those games to keep in the playoff race. And the Islanders humiliated them both nights, just not, you know, scored early, pushed them around physically, broke their will. And I think those were really kind of the backbreakers for how they wanted to remake their roster. So I think you're starting to see some of that Chris Drury wanted to bring in, not just Ryan Reeves is going to fight people, or, yeah, you know, Barkley Goodrow is going to cross check someone. I think it's more about the mentality. And I think they've shown flashes of it. They took a bit of a step back the other night against Calgary, but I think also Gerard Gallant is the kind of coach who has enough cachet and enough history as a coach who is understanding of his players and wants to see them succeed and be motivated, but also can be a little bit tough. And I think he got a little tough with them and was very candid in his comments. And I think that's something that's a bit new too, that they also have to understand that you can't just let it go on, or you can't mope or drift a bit mentally because you had a couple bad games, that it has to be right back to work and right back to that same mentality. So I think it will take some time, but I think they're on the right track.
Yeah. And the great thing talking to you is that you pretty much crossed off a lot of my notes for possible questions in that one answer. You mentioned that they have a lot of high-end skill there and talents there. Kaapo Kakko and Alexi Lafreniere are the two that come to mind when people mention young talents at the Rangers. And Lafreniere, I think, has got to a good start this season. Kakko is injured right now. I think he's about to come back maybe the next game. How patient are the Rangers, especially with the development of Kakko? Because this is his second year, so at some point this summer, next summer, they have to evaluate how much he is worth to them and maybe how much they want to pay him in his next contract. So how do you see them regarding or watching the development of Kakko, especially this year and so far?
It's an interesting one with him. You know, this being the end of his entry-level contract this season, and he really hasn't succeeded in the way that you might have thought, but obviously the team hasn't succeeded in a similar fashion. So, you know, if this is really going to be a breakout year for him, it might actually be a difficult situation for the Rangers, because then you get into an area where they have some other contracts. They have, you know, Adam Fox will be due a new contract next season, and obviously that's going to be top of the line consideration for Chris Drury, and also top dollar, because this is the reigning Norris Trophy winner. And they don't, you know, they have some decent cap space right now, but I think as you move forward, it starts to narrow quite a bit, because they do have quite a few guys signed through this season, especially after Mika Zibanejad's deal that they came to right before the season began. So I think Kakko is an interesting one. You know, they have him playing with Panarin and Strome. It's a very good second line. If he succeeds in that spot, if he can put together a very good year, it's obviously beneficial to the Rangers, but also there's the danger of an offer sheet, of a situation like Montreal faced with Kotkaniemi, where you get a big one-year offer that's hard to match, that would force you to make some other changes. So there's always those kinds of considerations with young players. You want them to succeed and grow and take the big step that you expected when you pick a guy like that second overall. But also there's a bit of danger lurking for them because everyone is so tight to the cap and it's only going to go up by $1 million for next season. So I'm certainly not saying that the Rangers would prefer that he have another mediocre season by any means. They want him to be good because he's an important top six player for them among their forward group. But I would be curious to see if he is able to have a much bigger jump this season from the last two, how they handle that in terms of negotiations in the offseason and how other teams view him in terms of an offer sheet, which, as we've seen, is incredibly rare around the league.
Yeah. Yeah, sadly, I would say, because I think there was a lot of entertainment in the summer with what the Hurricanes did there. So I would love to see more of those in the NHL. What's interesting to me is that you said that maybe the Rangers tried to emulate, in a way, the style and not the style, but the structure maybe that the Islanders have since they got Barry Trotz. And what's interesting to me is that the difference when you look at the money they pay for their players, the Rangers and then the Islanders, I think there's it looks different to me because the Rangers are more top heavy to me in their payment. As when you watch that Truber is earning $8 million, Panarin is earning 11.5, a little bit more than that. And when you watch the Rangers cap roll, they have, I would say, a pretty good structure for most of their good players between 4 and 7 million. And that to me is two concepts. So regarding the offseason from the Islanders, you mentioned that they were pretty successful. They went to the conference final twice. So, and they knew that they're going to get their captain back, Anders Lee, who was out for the rest of the regular season and the playoffs. So they knew they're going to get a top player back. So the approach they had to their offseason, what was their approach there in tuning up and maybe finding what was missing for the next step to finally get to the Stanley Cup finals again? What did you see in the way they handled their offseason, the Islanders, in regards to what was missing for them?
You know, it certainly can't be said that you know, that Lou Lamoriello is hesitant to be all in, as we like to say over here.
Yeah.
When it comes to trying to win, you know, these last two seasons, I think he's maybe given out some, like you said, managed the salary range incredibly well. And I think this offseason, the deals that Adam Pellick and now Ryan Pulock, whose deal won't start until 2022, they're two top defensemen, to get them both on a combined amount that's below $12 million total for the top defensive pair on one of the top defensive teams in the league, who are both 26, 27 years old, is a real masterstroke. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people will remember. They obviously lost a couple of key guys in Nick Leddy, who they traded to Detroit, and Jordan Eberle, who went to Seattle in the expansion draft. They signed Kyle Palmieri essentially to take,
yeah,
Eberle's spot. Maybe the one area where they could have, you know, done a bit better was filling Leddy's role. They did bring in Zdeno Chara, who, you know, is a fascinating story, and I think for Islander fans of a certain age, really fills them with joy to see a guy who was here when the team was at one of their lowest points, when they drafted him in the late 1990s, and he came and played his first three NHL seasons on some of the worst hockey teams even the Islanders have ever seen in the late 1990s, and then was traded to Ottawa in the Alexei Yashin deal and blossomed into the player that who will go straight to the Hall of Fame the minute he decides to retire, whenever that may be. So to see him come back is a bit of good nostalgia, but also he's 44 years old, and is he the sort of player who can play the style the Islanders and Barry Trotz demand, a very consistent, high-effort, high-impact style to keep pucks out of your own net and to keep pucks moving away from your defensive zone? So far, it's been a bit rocky for Chara. You have to think he'll be able to catch on because he's still a pretty well-conditioned guy, even at his age. But I have to think that when Lou Lamoriello traded Nick Leddy back in July to Detroit that he had something a little bit more, a little bit bigger in mind to, as a replacement, someone who's maybe a bit younger than Chara, a bit more offense minded as Letty was, someone who maybe fit their style of play a bit better. So, having lost that and having Chara in there, and then you also have Andy Green back, who'll be 39 in a couple of days. Those are some senior citizens when it comes to the NHL. Both guys that have played a long time and played at a high level, but it's a long season, and the Islanders don't have a ton of depth on defense. They don't have a lot of guys ready to step in when needed. So perhaps that's the one area that may come back to bite them. But overall, coming off the two performances they've had in the last two playoffs, getting so close to the finals, I think they feel like this is a big season for them. They're not a young team, but they are a very cohesive team. And I think the way that the players who were free agents this summer, or even restricted free agents, whether it was Pelech or Pulock a year ahead of time, Casey Cizikas, who's an important player for what they do, taking a very below market value, $2.5 million a year deal. These are guys that want to win, and they're very close with one another. And I think to look back and see the way that Lou Lamoriello played his hand when he came in almost 4 years ago, keeping a lot of the core of the team together that hadn't been very successful for a couple of years and building them back up also with help from Barry Trotz, this is them paying him back. This is them saying, you trusted us. We succeeded in a bit for you. We want to go further and we're willing to make it work for you. So this is a team that feels like they're very far along and very close to reaching the highest level, and they want to be able to get there as soon as they can.
I know it's early and teams have played a different number of games right now, but the Islanders sit seventh in their division. And I know that's just maybe mostly due to the fact that they've just played six games. Other teams have played more games, but also due to the fact that they have not played a home game. And if I'm correct, they won't play a home game until November 20th, I think. It's the first game against Calgary in the new arena. How much fear is there in the organization that long road trip to start the season might have an effect on their stand or their position in the standings at the end of the season? Because one thing that they didn't have in the last couple of years was that they had home ice advantage, because they went into the playoffs as one of the lower seeds. That could maybe something that could help them to make the next step there. Is there any fear that this long road trip might have an effect on the season?
I think there's a bit. It's just such a unique situation to be on such a long trip. There have been other teams in the last 20 years or so that needed to be on the road to start the season to open their new buildings or finish renovations. The kind of the longest one that I could find was the Rangers back in 2013. Mm-hmm. When Madison Square Garden was going through the final stages of its giant renovation, and they started the season with 9 games on the road and actually came back 3-6, which included some awful games for them. And I did a story with some of those guys about how they felt. You know, they lost in San Jose, I think it was 9-3, in Anaheim 5-0 the next night. So there was some real doubt in that room about what kind of team they could be. They also had a new coach that year, and then they managed to pull themselves together, and pull themselves together is a bit of an understatement, because they went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals that year. So sometimes it can be a damaging thing, I think, for a certain kind of team, maybe a more fragile team. But I think for the Islanders, you know, Cal Clutterbuck kind of summed it up best the other day. He said, we've had a lot of weird the last couple of years. So that this may feel weird, but it's nothing that we really haven't faced before. They spent 6 weeks in the bubble in Toronto and Edmonton in the 2020 playoffs. They went through the very strange season last year, playing in front of no fans for the entire regular season, and then kind of a bit more, and ended up closing out Nassau Coliseum in incredible fashion with Anthony Beauvillier's overtime winner in Game 6 against Tampa in the semifinals. So I think they've had their share of odd situations, so that may help them here. And also, they have one of the real great coaches, not just X's and O's, but someone who understands these kinds of situations in Barry Trotz. And he just, I think he just the leadership that he projects, he's very prepared. I'm sure he was thinking about this all summer long. And I think he understands that he has a veteran group, but also has a veteran coaching staff and the sort of mind that can come up with ways to really break it down and not make it feel like it's this giant long thing. Even now, they played their first six games all in one spell, came back. They only have one game this week. Next week, they go back out for three. They come back, they go out for two more, and then all of a sudden it's done. And I think they've broken it up into enough smaller bites. They came home, had a couple of days off. Guys were with their families. I don't think it feels as overwhelming as it might seem on the outside. And then if you get through it, even at just 500, if you're, you know, 6-6-1 when it's over with, you're still ahead of the game because you have so many more home games to go and a new building that only exactly. The Islanders players have been able to see and be in. And it's going to be a brand new place for a lot of visitors, which can be a little bit unsettling as well. The Islanders went through that when they moved to Brooklyn, a place that was a very odd scenario for hockey. But the Islanders had an exceptional record there because the visitors were the ones that were really, really thrown off by the environment. So this is another new building. It's the Islanders building. These teams are going to be coming in, seeing it for the first time. I think there'll be a lot of advantages for the Islanders if they can get through this with a decent enough record. And even if it's not as decent as they'd like, this is not a team that's really built to panic this early in the season.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, they have the knowledge that they can get deep into the playoffs, even if they are the lowest seed and if they are not one of the top seeds in their division. You briefly mentioned, when we talked about the Rangers, you briefly mentioned Igor Shesterkin, and you got Ilya Sorokin on the other side playing for the Islanders. Has there been any buzz about those two Russian goaltenders, both in New York and both playing very good right now to start the season? Is that something that is mentioned there in the news?
Not always in tandem, because I think Islander fans and Ranger fans would not be delighted to hear that those two are very good friends and have been for a long time. And we're really, you know, the most fascinating part to me is that they were good friends and kind of came up through the Russian system together, but also were on the biggest rival teams in Cheska and Ska for so many years. And now here they are on two of the biggest rivals, at least as far in the United States, as far as hockey is concerned. And very close proximity to one another. It's a tremendous story, and it's, you know, because of the pandemic, it's been hard to dig in on it. But it's definitely one of the things that I want to look into and get a chance to talk to both of them about, if it's possible. You know, it's interesting to see. Shesterkin seems like a bit more serious guy than Sorokin. Sorokin, I think, even through the Zooms that we've had with him, his English has been incredible, considering when he came here, he knew very little and had to spend his whole time in the Toronto bubble 18 months ago, just learning English and practicing and not being able to play. But, you know, he has a real youthful personality. And I think that the Islanders have really embraced him as someone who is just a very happy, you know, he seems like he never has a bad day. And I think that's a quality when a guy like that comes over and has been through, you know, pretty much from day one of the pandemic to now. This is the time that he spent in a country several thousand miles from home and has performed as well as he has, you know, to see him step in when Semyon Varlamov wasn't ready to start the playoffs against Pittsburgh last year or last spring, to see what Sorokin was able to do in that series, I think was really a huge feather in his cap for him and a huge bit of excitement for the fans and even for Lou Lamoriello, because they know that this is a goalie who they will have for a long time and has been able to handle a very strange situation with incredible grace and ease. So that gives them a lot of confidence in a very important position. And as far as Shesterkin goes, you know, he looks very Henrik Lundqvist like. It is a bit of a reminder of how the Rangers were so successful when Lundqvist was at his peak. They played a style that allowed some better chances than you would think for a team that was built that way, but Lundqvist would always shut the door. And Shesterkin certainly did that in their road trip, where he only gave up, I think it was 5 or 6 goals in 4 That's games, and especially that incredible game in Toronto with the thrilling overtime, where he, you know, just seemed to make acrobatic save after acrobatic save. He's a really dynamic player for a goalie, and I think the Rangers, lots of other teams probably feeling very jealous that even in the post Lundqvist era, the Rangers may have found a goalie that can last them another 10 or 15 years and play at such a high level that Shesterkin is already playing at. So it's a good time to be a fan of both of these teams as far as their goalies are concerned, because these are two guys that have another decade in their prime at least to perhaps be dueling against one another, and hopefully in a playoff series or two if it can work out that way.
Well, that could lead to my last question. If you would look out into the season, if you would look out into your glass bowl and say, okay, this is the way I would expect, or maybe I would think the season ends for both teams, where do you see them ending? I had, just to give you my thoughts on them when I did my previews, I had the Islanders winning their division, and I had the Rangers somewhere in the playoff bubble, 4 or 5. So maybe regarding the other divisions, maybe they end up in the playoffs. And I have the Islanders as one of the favorites, maybe even to get to the Stanley Cup final, because I think that Tampa is not as good anymore. And a team like Florida might start good, but I don't know how they will play in the playoffs. So what is your outlook for those teams in the rest of the season?
You know, I had very much the same thought at the beginning of the year. Now that I've been able to see a couple weeks, I might change it a tad. But I could certainly see the Islanders competing for the division. I'm not sure that they're built for regular season success the way that a team like Carolina is. And so I think maybe I give the edge now to the Hurricanes, seeing the way that they've started. They've gotten better goaltending than I would have expected. Yeah. And their skill level is really maybe unparalleled in the division. So I initially had the Islanders 1, I think Flyers 2, Carolina 3, Rangers 4. I'd probably jumble it now and say Carolina 1, Islanders 2. I'm not so sure the Rangers can get to 3, but they could be in that 4, 5, and 6 mix. I'm feeling confident that the Flyers will be in the playoffs. I think Alain Vigneault is the kind of coach who doesn't miss the playoffs more than 1 year in a row. So they seem to have gotten things back on track. Washington's off to a good start. Pittsburgh's off to a good start, although they seem to be fading a bit and in need of their star players to come back. But I, you know, and I think it's going to, the challenge really for the Rangers is to see if they can beat out one of Pittsburgh or Washington and have some staying power. As I said, you know, they looked very good. They looked like a team that could start to have that mental toughness to be able to withstand a long season and withstand some ups and downs. They've had, you know, Kako out with an injury, Strom missing time with COVID. So they've been through some situations already that can test them. And if they can come through those feeling good and still being in the mix in the division, then maybe they will have developed some of that toughness along the way. I think it's going to be difficult for them because Washington and Pittsburgh, much like the Islanders, they learned how to win these games and get points to get into the playoffs a long, long time ago. And that's important knowledge to have when you go through an 82 game season. So I think they'll need a bit of luck. The Rangers will, to get there. Right now I'd probably pick them for 5th, and maybe if the other division, like you said, is weaker, that will be good enough. But if it's not, you know, I think the Rangers still can take some heart that there's some progress there, because they have started to change kind of their character a bit. And if it doesn't work this season, at least they'll know that they're on the right track.
Arthur, as always, thanks a lot for your information. And I hope that it's going to be a great first game at the, I think it's a UBS Arena at Belmont Park. By the way, how far is that, or how's that different to the Nassau Coliseum from the travel? I think it's closer to the Manhattan area than the Nassau Coliseum from the travel.
Yeah, it's about I'd say 15 miles, maybe 10 or so miles further west from Nassau Coliseum, so closer to New York City. It's okay. Right on the border of Long Island and Queens. And I think the most important part for people that want to go there that don't, you know, they, whether living in the city or visitors, is that there is a train stop at UBS Arena, which there never was at Nassau Coliseum. Yeah. So hopefully
that's the problem I had. Yeah.
That will be a bigger drawing point for people like yourself to come in and see games.
Okay. Arthur, thanks a lot. Always a pleasure. And as I said, I hope for a great first game, and I hope that you can arrange both teams very good during this season. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Lars. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Bye, guys.